Hello there, this is Colin Baker and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And doesn't make... I'll do it again.
And welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 455. I'm Adam, and I forgot what I was going to say now. What was it now? Oh, blast! I had one in my mind, and you lot put me off.
I think it starts with, I am the Doctor.
No, it starts with, there was something a bit, hang on, let me think. There was a Edgeworth, there's one of them. Embolism, I suppose, which is one of my favourite lines from the whole thing. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
Do not monitor my thoughts.
Robert Haynes.
Our genius has been abused.
And Mary Lang.
Doctor, are you having another fit?
Oh, got a vibration.
Did you find that there was too many quotes?
I think I'm going to be sick.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to pick Lieutenant.
Oh, yes, indeed.
What about I'm a knight errant, not an errant fool?
Right, anyway.
Last time, we had a bit of an argument about Lieutenant and Lieutenant.
Yes, I know.
If you wouldn't mind, I want to introduce our next co-presenter.
Lieutenant.
Ian Bissett.
Hello. I am a doctor, whether you like it or not.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Nice to meet you all. And what are you?
You did sign the disclaimer about if you happen to go away with any sort of illnesses after doing the show, any sort of
I ate that. I thought
problems with your mind that you might not have had prior to doing the show.
Have you ever listened to the Cultum Collective?
I suppose that does answer that one.
There's no sense worrying about my mental state then.
Oh, dear. Yes, well, welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, and just strap yourself in.
All righty. I'll try and behave myself. Or should I not?
Well, it'd be nice if somebody could.
Nobody does. Don't worry about it.
Nice if you're not supposed to, though. Kirby. Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about Twin Dilemma, and Ian is a particular expert of the Sixth Doctors, are you not?
Well, I am very fond of the Sixth Doctor. Expert? I don't know. I don't like the two.
I'm quite fond of the Sixth Doctor.
I do happen to have a penchant for Sixie.
Don't use posh words, it'll start confusing people.
I like him too.
I like him too.
So do I. I did say this.
And he's the only... The only doctor I've met who actually is one of the only few people who I've met who's been on the show who recognized me when
You've
I met
got a thing
him
about that, Kirby,
time.
Haven't you?
Oh, wow.
Never lets that
I
one
met
go.
I met him at Timegate in Atlanta before it became Wholanta.
Yeah.
And he was so lovely, and he complimented me on the coat that I was wearing, which I think is a very, very poor imitation of it, but... The fact that he said, that's a lovely coat. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Somebody thinks it's lovely.
Well,
he complimented the fact. I mean, he's like, I know it's not his favorite thing, but the fact that I was wearing it because it's his, and he took the time to acknowledge that rather than going, why are you wearing that rubbish thing? Which would have been the funny thing to say, but he decided to say, love it. That's all I wanted to hear was that he appreciated the gesture of me wearing the coat. That's really cool.
Right then. So we've got Lillian Robin who said hello. Terry Miles has said hello, everybody. Laurie Nick says happy Sunday afternoon in June to all. Thank you, Laurie.
Hello, Laurie.
I think we should embark on.
I still have not heard back from Matthew, so I guess he's either asleep or doesn't wish to join us or whatever.
Oh, by the way, Debbie Melrose can't make it this evening. I didn't get to read the very long bit of blurb she wrote as to why, but I hope everything is all right. Well, it was. Well, it was for me. I'm busy. So, episode one, when it eventually loads up, I hope this DVD thing actually works properly. Right, episode one starts with a bit of a title sequence, all multicolored, and they've run it through a filter to make it.
Fred really enjoyed that.
It rather looks like the Doctor's sort of head is going through one of those tunnels, you know, and you get one of the sort of video games of the late 80s.
Apparently. Yeah.
And you get a couple of Womulus and Wemus who playing pudding basin haircuts.
Not that terrible.
What, the haircuts?
Not that terrible.
Womulus and Wemus.
Well, it is interesting that they were actually looking for different kinds of twins, and they weren't looking necessarily for, you know, matching, you know, identical. They were going to see whether they could get a boy and a girl. And while they were searching for a boy and a girl who could act, et cetera, not necessarily look that identical, they came across the Conrad boys.
So he went along with somebody who couldn't act. I'm only joking. It wasn't that bad. I'm sorry.
They said they read well. And I mean, they're kids, you know.
No, I think they were okay. I must admit, I want to watch it this time. I didn't get at all irritated.
Romulus and Remus.
Womulus and Wemus. Get it right, Kirby. Yes. Womulus and Wemus.
They should have called them Castor and Pollux.
Grief. Of course, one wears the green and one wears the sort of goldy brown suit to distinguish one against the other. But they didn't play the traditional game they do with identical twins and swap them around at some point.
How do we know?
They're lying the whole time.
And their father only does this one scene at the beginning.
That's the bizarre part of the storyline.
And there's a loose reference against their mother that they don't like very much.
Harsh. I get the feeling she's dumb.
She's not quite as clever as them. Yeah, but you know what they remind me of? A couple of young Sheldons. Young Sheldons. I mean, the young Sheldon, but the all right, slightly older Sheldons. Not quite.
Or the annoying little kid in Georgia Mildred who lived next door.
Good dear, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
Oh dear, you've got
the same haircut too.
Yeah, the bald.
Same era.
Probably.
Anyway, they bully their dad.
Unfortunately, they remind me of me at that age.
You know, they
green dots on his wrists.
Yeah. I always thought when I saw those green dots on their wrists, they were like polos. I don't know why. They don't actually look like polos, but I just think of a little minty sweets.
On the close-up, one of them is peeling off.
Yeah, I know.
On the wall, there's almost like a crossword puzzle that hasn't quite been filled in, which is quite curious.
Yeah.
That looks absolutely rubbish.
Does it? Well, because they haven't filled it in.
Looks terrible.
You can actually get touch lights like that now that you can put on your wall, and you run your hand across, and they're done just like that. I saw that on the wall. I'm like, I know what that is now.
That sounds cool.
Back then it looked like crap.
Yeah. And then we see Colin Baker wearing the Fifth Doctor's suit and looking actually probably slightly better apart from the mud than Davison himself. Perry's a bit horrible to him, to be fair. He's just regenerated. He's obviously not going to be feeling that well, even though he's bouncing around the TARDIS console room.
His attitude. Yeah, it stinks at this moment.
It stinks for most of this story, to be fair. But
only her second outing with the Doctor, and all of a sudden,
she clicks. But he's immediately, for me, got stage presence, even when he's being the slightly not quite there Doctor.
Well, he's a good actor.
He's just him. It's all about him. He's the Doctor, and I know he's sort of trying very hard to prove to everybody he's a Doctor, but when he's starting to get the character, which is about halfway through the story, he sort of emanates Doctor-ness very, very quickly for me, whereas even though, obviously, I've already said the Fifth Doctor's my favourite, it wasn't an immediate thing for me and Davison. It was probably about three stories in, but... Colin was straight into that doctor-ness, that, you know, that slightly bonkers, which subsequent doctors have all had an element of Colin Baker's doctor in them, you know, in the way he sort of talks and goes off on a tangent and then comes back again.
But there's always the outfit search as well, you know, the costume.
Yeah.
That seems to be
there's actually a scene, I think it's the you know, in the first episode or what, but there's a bit where he's talking to Perry, and then he does this walk around the TARDIS, touching switches, like flicking things on and off and on, and I just watched that today, and I was like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's brand new, he's just stepped onto the set, and here he is, walking and talking, and making that console sing like the Doctor does, and I'm just like, there's no gap, that's the Doctor, right there.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah.
I think that this is one of the fastest This Is the Doctor regeneration episodes that there are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's the fastest where the person himself recognizes he's the Doctor.
Yeah.
Well, no, where I acknowledge him as the Doctor.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Audience acknowledgement. That's what we're looking at. Mm. Anyway, so he...
11 was pretty fast, too.
Yeah. But he's... goes quickly into the wardrobe room and has a bit of a funny turn, and finds some jackets and bits and bobs, and eventually, rather bizarrely, ends up with a really weird suit, which is probably the second most recognisable Doctor Who costume, probably, of all.
Probably borrowed it from a musical, stage musical.
Yes, that's true.
The Doctor in his Donovan. Amazing multicolored
I've worn that coat. You know, I wore that coat very brief. No, I didn't get to wear it. Alistair wore it. I had another chance to wear that coat at FantasyCon last year, and I've just realised I didn't. I should have. I got near to that
the actual coat.
Yeah, well,
the actual coat. Oh.
When Colin
You've
came
been
to
harping
the...
on about that so long now.
I know, but when Colin came to the Isle of Wight previously, not when he came last year to FantasyCon, but when he came previously, he came in the guise of the Doctor, in Bessie, wearing his costume. Mm. And me, Alistair Pearson, and he had a picture taken of us in Bessie, but Alistair got to wear the coat. And now Alistair has the coat, which is a perfect... copy of it, and we had it hanging up behind Colin at FantasyCon, and a few people were lucky enough to get to wear it and have their picture taken with Colin at the event.
You.
And once again, yes, I didn't get a chance to wear it, but there you go. Such is my life.
You'd probably break it.
I think I'm going to have to go take a lie down for a minute. Well, I think about that.
Okay. What about the coat? Yeah, but I mean, that's you should. Yeah, I just can't believe that Alistair got to wear it on the back of Bessie and I didn't. Or, you know, we didn't take turns with it. And I suppose it was the fact that Colin put it around Alistair and got him to wear it rather than he was never going to give it to me. Anyway, back to Twin Dilemma.
Live with regrets.
Well.
Real quick aside, I got Colin Spall to wear my coat.
Oh. I got Colin Baker to wear my pussycat badge. That's the happy part of the story. The sad part is I lost it.
We're not doing one-ups. We're not doing one-ups.
Sure we can.
Anyway, so...
I don't hear anymore.
Bite.
Speaking of that little pussy cat pin that he wears, do you know that the plan was that that pin was going to be different for every story?
Yeah. It was eventually, though, wasn't it?
Because Colin's infant son died, and they started this fundraising thing for the foundation that he was going to support. They mass produced those cat pins, and so it became so iconic that kind of made him have to wear that all the time.
I thought I saw different cat pins sometimes.
Do you know what, Kirby? When you said I thought I saw, and we were talking about cats, I thought you were going
to
say a putty tat.
A putty tat. I did.
Look, we're in unison now, Dan.
Ian Kirk says Nicholas Bond Owen played Tristram in George and Mildred.
That's right.
Yeah, but now, when you say the name Tristram, that's when I now remember the character. Lillian Robin said Six should have worn one of those dresses we see in the wardrobe room. Yeah, it's true. That would have really made things different. Maybe not, actually. I don't think it's a good idea. Anyway, right, back to Doctor Who. Morris Denham turns up. And he's actually perfect throughout the story, apart from the one bit where he's trying to do the miming of Mestor. I'm a bit disappointed, Kirby, you haven't called me Mestor once, because it's only a change of syllables. I mean Master, Mestor. Well, never mind.
I know, yeah.
Anyway, he kidnaps a couple of children. It's appalling.
Pedophile.
And also the thing that bothers me is that they're so scientific, and yet they think this was magic.
I know.
No, no magic's in the other room, Kirby, on the settee, wearing
his
doggy nappy. So, yeah, so like we just talked about the Doctor getting his little pussycat badge that I lost. Mm-hmm. But I do have a picture of Colin stroking it. I can't believe I lost that badge. I don't know. Maybe someone nicked it. I don't know. Maybe I should have kept it in the safe place.
A cat badge on, and it actually got dry cleaned into my suit permanently.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
My wedding suit. I'm never going to wear it again.
The twins and Edgeworth arrive via Transmat. I tell you, my son, I've noticed, though, that Edgeworth does get a bit embarrassed every time he talks to a mess store. He sort of goes bright red. Maybe he's trying to hide something. I don't know.
They're trying to hide the awful costume.
Lee Anthony Davis says, hello, Lee here, tuning in for the first time. All right, everybody behave themselves. Let's do some proper serious podcasting. Should I talk posh?
But there's the news.
So, yeah, and then there's a bit, isn't there, when we forgot to mention this, but I should have used this as my my quote, actually, is when the Doctor sort of shows his suit off to Perry and she says, yuck. So, and then he like a child, when Perry bounces into the console room, yuck. He says, yuck. I don't think anybody could really go yuck about Nicola Bryant at this stage. Mm-mm. Anyway, no. Sorry, I got sidetracked slightly there.
Costume she wore.
But it's at this point the Doctor has one of his funny turns again, and almost throttles poor Perry, and is scared to death by the reflection of his own face.
That was a bit much, don't you think?
It was quite strong, but I quite liked that element because
you like that?
Well, if you just come off the back of a very dramatic story, as in Case of Androzani, which had quite a lot of violence in it, to be fair, and it sort of kept that sort of element going a little bit while also being slightly light-hearted. I haven't got a problem with it. The Doctor's gone a bit doolally, and you've got to a stage where you don't know whether you're going to like him or not, and I think it's okay.
I agree though, but with the unstable bit, you know, they've done that in the past, so
yeah. But the Doctor has never before or since throttled his companion. But
no. That might accept the idea that they could do in today's television and nobody would bat an eyelid. But back then, it was like,
yeah, it was quite strong. But I'm glad they kept it in, because it made for drama. It's nice to have something that shocks a little bit in a story. Anyway, the twins' daddy, in his probably his last appearance in the story, realizes his sons have gone and radios Lieutenant/Lieutenant Lang. Any relation, Mary?
I thought it was Sergeant.
Lieutenant.
Yeah,
Sergeant.
Lieutenant.
Called Sergeant.
And then the Doctor recovers from his funny turn, and Perry's a bit sort of scared, and she tells him what happens, and he suddenly decides that... Is this the stage he decides he has to become a hermit?
Yes. Atone for his misdeeds.
The twins, meanwhile, are left on their own to start fiddling with some random electronics. These men, I know they're supposed to be bird creatures, aren't they? Are they sort of based on crows or something?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, they're quite a good makeup in that, aren't they? I was quite impressed with that.
I like them.
They haven't reappeared. And it also enabled the Doctor to do some what would now probably be regarded as racist jokes against them. I know they don't actually exist, but the terms the Doctor used in his jokes against them, especially later on in the story, would be a bit harsh. Anyway, right, so moving on. I'm just skipping forward. I should really play some lift music for this point. So the Doctor arrives at... what's the first planet they arrive at? It's not... Jaconda, is it?
Titan
3. Because he goes down on his knees.
And some of us paid attention.
All right. I have people trying to distract me while watching these stories. Anyway, so he goes on his knees and he sort of pays homage to the sort of rather desolate... Is that the right word? Desolate. On the monitor while Perry sort of stands rolling her eyes thinking, for goodness sake. And then the twins, Edgeworth and the sort of birdie creatures, arrive. I think in Jaconda this time. I think they're in Jaconda, aren't they? And they're trying to
no,
do this.
No, they're on.
They're Titan
they're
as well.
They're all on the same planet.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's
sorry.
On the same planet.
So I'm just making sure
except,
you look.
Except for Nestor and.
Mestor. Yeah. But Mestor, not Nestor. And also.
Mestor.
I was just making sure you lot are paying attention, so well done. Lillian Robbins says, I like Perry's outfit. So do I.
I do too.
I should try to cosplay it. Yes, you should, Lillian. Yes.
It's one of her most comfortable looking outfits that she got to wear.
Yes. Yeah. The other funny thing, of course, is every time.
And what's more, so
next season.
Every
so
time. Sorry, Mary.
Minutes.
Sorry, Mary, I missed that because I was talking over you. And, you
once, and once again, so appropriate for exploring unknown planets.
She looked cold, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, she would have been. Anyway.
That red blanket out or whatever it was.
So I did notice, though, in the early parts of the story that when every time Edgeworth is having a conversation and got a bit embarrassed talking to psychically to Mestor, they were trying to sort of hint that this amazingly scary monster was eventually going to be revealed as the story went on, which sadly never came to fruition. Although when he sort of died at the end, that was a bit yucky, wasn't it?
That was good.
The interesting thing about that is that was actually farmed out to an independent contractor. A team that put that together, which I was like, maybe the BBC should have just done it themselves.
Cause, I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but the effect at the end was fine, but the whole thing, and I assume that's where the entire budget for the episode probably went.
What, on that rubbish suit?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And some feathers.
Well, he could hardly move in it, could he? He was just waving his sort of hands around, really. That's basically all he could do, and stand a little bit.
I know.
Plus, he was claustrophobic.
Oh.
Perfect man for the job.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so Edgeworth is sort of. He's got plans and he's sort of working for Mestor. The Doctor and Perry arrive because the spaceship's crashed. Sorry, I forgot to mention this. Lieutenant Lang's spaceship crashed. No relation, Mary, is it? No.
Okay. Oh, no. Well, of course.
Descendant.
Yeah, we go way back.
So I have a question.
I suppose.
Hang on, Kirby has a question. Prepare yourselves.
So I guess all of those policemen or whatever they are go to the comic book store badge store to get these giant comic type badges because it's so huge.
they do look ridiculous, don't they?
Was that a rhetorical question, Kirby?
Yes.
Really worth waiting for. I hope the people have managed to get their cups of tea sorted out, and we'll get back to the story. Right then. Perry was allowed to wear some sort of cloak while sort of looking at this sort of crash scene, which was actually quite well done, to be fair.
They cover her legs, though, but, you know.
No, that's right. And then they find this sort of
blank.
What?
They made a bit of a boo-boo because how could they not see that man lying down there from where they were. It's just like they walk a few steps from where they were walking before. Oh, we found somebody.
Don't worry about it. That doesn't matter.
Robert.
Oh, God, here we go. Yes. Fan science fiction fantasy TV show.
you know what? That's the point of the story where you go, look over there.
There's been worse ones when people have just sort of ran into shots and suddenly they appear. I've seen some worse ones like that. But I don't think it was more remarkable the fact that they didn't see him until the last minute. It was more remarkable was he was still wearing his hat after a crash like that. Yeah.
Better wear your uniform.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think Perry sort of says, let's take him into the TARDIS, and the Doctor, I've noticed, does a lot of lunging poses in this story. Sort of, he's lunging on top of tables. He's lunging on tables. Now on the floor, he's lunging on the floor while sort of looking at Lieutenant
Lang. Maybe it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
I actually really, really liked that. I was watching those and I was like, you know, he didn't do so much of that when they came back.
No, that's true.
And I was like, you know what? That was kind of cool because it was like he just owned the place. He just laid all over everything. And he'd do cross-legged up on the table. Yeah. You know, your mum would tell you.
Yeah, yeah, sort of like meditation poses and stuff like that. But what got me, I'm looking at how...
complains. He complains to Lang how old he is and how he can't do anything.
Yeah, I know. But the funny thing is, when I dropped Colin off at the New Holmwood Hotel when he came over last year, the New Holmwood Hotel doesn't have a lift, and he wasn't particularly happy about that because he obviously had to struggle up the stairs. He sort of moaned a little bit, but said, "Oh well, I'm here now," and off he went. But he didn't. I did ask him via email if he had any particular, things that he needed, and he didn't mention a lift. So,
blue M&Ms or something like that.
What?
Blue M&Ms or something like that.
Robert. Anyway, back to Doctor.
It's the Sixth Doctor. He likes multicolors.
Certainly, it doesn't have jelly babies. But So Lang wakes up and points the gun at the Doctor, making him do a funny face.
Pistol.
Yeah, that looks pathetic.
Making his face go funny and the theme music scream, and that was the end of episode one.
Well, it looked like a hot glue gun without
it. It did about 25 minutes.
It did, eh?
Is this a commentary?
It is. Sorry, what? We're not doing commentaries here?
Anyway, so he's just about to shoot the Doctor and he faints. So Perry looks after him, much to the Doctor's annoyance, because the Doctor's thinking, oh, well, you try to kill me, yet you're going to look after him. Which is essentially what the Doctor...
He saw that outfit, that's why he fainted.
Yeah, probably.
But look at the outfit he nicks later.
Rob Lansdowne says, oh, this is just awful, the story, not the podcast. Well, thank you, Rob. I was getting a bit worried for a moment there. Right then, meanwhile, on Titan 3, the twins are doing some strange things while writing squares on a perspex sheet, which apparently is mathematics of some variety.
It's basically the same thing they were doing electronically back at their apartment. Yeah.
And these mathematical calculations are to create something impossible that we'll find out about later in the story. But
how are
it's
they
impossible, but fun, and it's fine science fiction fantasy, so it's acceptable, isn't it, Kirby?
Was it acceptable, though, to wrap everything in aluminium foil?
Yeah.
I know.
Yes, it's a science fiction program.
And not fasten things to the floor properly.
The Doctor gets a little piece of equipment from Dr. Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation and heals the wounds that Lang has, which never gets used again in Doctor Who. But
did you like something that they did as well?
Which was?
Here are the Doctor mere meters away from the man saying, oh, we hid the power pack in the wardrobe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. I didn't actually notice that bit, but I'm pretty sure that they knew he was unconscious and couldn't hear it, but there you go. But that didn't dawn on me, but it's a good point. I would ding my bell for you, but apparently I got told off last week by Shoe Must Be Away for dinging the bell too often.
Oh, no!
The interesting thing is that when he goes and finds his outfit later, he just happens to put on the very garment that she hid it in.
In that whole wardrobe, yes.
He must have a bad taste wardrobe there, too, as well.
Oh, yeah, that must be the bad taste room.
They moved the TARDIS, I believe.
She should have put it in one of the dresses.
I'm pretty sure they moved the TARDIS, because the Doctor and Perry stride out of the TARDIS up a Quarry Hill with the same smoky effects they used for caves in the previous story. And they head for the
same hill.
The little mound. And they find an opening to this little mound, and the Doctor... goes in, and then we see the twins having a lie down and them showing off their little green circles.
Actually, that scene between the two of them is actually quite good.
Yeah, no, I think on the whole they weren't too bad in this story. I found them more irritating when I was younger, but I was waiting for some particularly appalling bit of acting watching it this time and didn't really find anything. There's certainly been
some of the lines so that they get us silly, like, our genius has been abused, which I use.
But having watched Big Bang Theory, it's very, very Sheldon. It's the sort of thing Sheldon would say all the time.
Yes.
And
when he said he's from Jaconda, they said, what happens there? Like kids.
Yeah.
But if they're really intelligent, they would have said, what planetary system is that in?
Yeah. But maybe they're just...
Oh, what
Yeah, but maybe they're just intelligent in a particular field, i.e. mathematics. They haven't got a larger scope. I think they're fine, to be fair. I think they're okay. They're quite good fun characters. And I know one of the twins actually carried on and had an acting career afterwards, and certainly his acting did improve still. Anyway, the Doctor and Perry... Pardon? Yes, they did. You'll have to look
did
it up.
Did they?
Yes, they did. You still have to look it up.
I thought they
Kirby
did
is now looking
else.
It up as we speak. Anyway, where do we go? Oh, yeah, so the Doctor and Perry stumble across a couple of bird men, and then it's a funny scene in which the Doctor sort of hides behind Perry and sort of tries to drop her in it, basically. Edgeworth, meanwhile, is getting a bit tired, so he, in a bizarre scene, goes into one of those Borg sort of regeneration machines, and his body turns
weird,
in,
though?
His body turns into a weird diagram that doesn't even overlap him. And again, they use those little dots they use when they try to bring the The Awakening. What's that creature called in The Awakening?
The Malice. The
Malice, yeah. It's the same sort of effects they use when the Malice appears in the TARDIS.
Will that be the Malice?
Yeah, that's the one.
I hope when they bring this out on Blu-ray that maybe they'll redo that effect.
Yeah. It's very brief, though. Is it really worth it for such a brief scene?
I don't know. It's just embarrassing.
I think if they did the Blu-ray set, they'd be concentrating either on the magma creature on Kaiser Androzani or the Mirka.
Yeah.
It didn't disturb me as much as The Awakening.
I love The Awakening, but we'll go back to this one.
It looked more like it fit.
Yeah, they did have it on the screen a lot in The Awakening, so that's why it's probably more noticeable. Anyway, the Doctor and Perry arrive in the place where everybody else is and walk past a couple of blancmange moulds. I don't know why the blancmange moulds are there, but never mind. Hang on, just waiting for the DVD to catch up with itself.
Everybody's going to be somewhere. I mean, if you were a blancmange mould, where would you be? Right?
I suppose that's not a bad. I've heard worse answers, to be fair. Lillian Robbins says Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
That's a video game.
Oh, is it? Okay. So the Doctor meets up with Edgeworth and recognises him from somewhere. But Edgeworth is saying, "Oh, I don't know, not me. It's nothing. I don't know. What you're talking about."
Time Lords could automatically recognise one another.
Even though they've just regenerated and stuff, but it's probably a psychic connection, Robert, isn't it?
It didn't take that long for them to recognise each other.
No, he's getting old.
Yeah, anyway. And I feel was he talking about a meeting when he was the Fourth Doctor? That's what the gist I got.
No, I think it's the third.
Was it the third?
He said I've regenerated twice since we last met.
So it's the fourth because it'd be Baker into Davison, Davison into the other Baker. that's the twice, isn't it? Anyway,
he's just regenerated into Colin Baker.
Yeah, so that's his second regeneration.
Slum would be from Tom Baker into.
Yeah, so it's Tom Baker. Sam? I mean, it's the fourth Doctor. No? Meanwhile,
either one.
Mary's great 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 grandson wakes up in the console room.
Yeah,
Mary, was your maiden name Lieutenant
or Sergeant?
I've been waiting to do that joke for a while.
They did hide the power pack for the gun, but I think probably a better idea would be just to take it with them and the gun. But no, they leave the gun on the console room. Yeah. And he goes poking around looking for the other bit. So the Doctor and Edgeworth.
That's what she said.
Pardon?
That's what she said.
Oh, I didn't hear that one. Sorry, I missed on that one. Edgeworth has decided he's going to leave the Doctor and Perry behind while they go off to Jaconda. Did I get that bit right?
Yes.
Lillian Robbins says Harvey Birdman was an animated show on Cartoon Network Adult Swim. Yeah.
And they also made a video game, I think, as well.
Ah, there you go. So the Lieutenant finds his bit, obviously, like we said, in the jacket.
Don't you mean Lieutenant?
Which looks like Sergeant. It almost looks like one of the shell suits that the Liverpudlians would have worn in that time of in the 1980s. Remember Yosser Hughes? Oh dear, that's probably going beyond you a lot. So Liverpudlians would wear these sort of shell suits for just for the sake of it. Anyway, so Edwards leaves them behind, goes off to Chaconda, and then the Doctor realises that that they're in a situation. He thinks they've got ages to work out how to get out of the place, but they've set a bomb. They set a bomb going that's going to blow them to smithereens. Yeah. And talking about amazing Technicolor dream coats, the lieutenant's coat is pretty, multicolored and sparkly.
That's 80s space fashion.
Yeah.
Really?
Shell suit stuff. Anyway, so off.
They go foil with markers.
Oh, I just realised. Edgeworth and his cronies actually materialise in a spaceship that goes to Chaconda. So the Doctor finds a way of sending Perry back to the TARDIS using this transmat thingy just in the nick of time. Uses her watch to time his transfer. And of course, the worst scene in the whole story arrives. This is the one I find the most embarrassing, is when she arrives and obviously Lieutenant points a gun at her and she shrugs it off. But when they watch the explosion on the monitor, which makes them, it was so bright that they actually turned away from the monitor. It must have been very high definition, that monitor. She then goes, "Oh, Doctor!"
Time Lord technology.
Terrible gurn she does.
Doctor!
The cliffhangers in this story are quite embarrassing, quite sort of blatantly. This is a cliffhanger. Oi, everybody, watched it. This is the cliffhanger, rather than letting it sneak up on you. And you know,
but I feel sorry for them.
Perry.
Perry.
Yeah, Colin's got one a little later. Yeah. It's just the forced close up.
He does say Braveheart Tegan at one point. I forgot to mention about that.
I know. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the way he stops, you know, and gives it that thought.
And then wanders off on that point.
Even though he didn't
calls her Tegan. Does he say Braveheart?
Yeah. No, he says Braveheart. Pretty sure he says Braveheart.
He said Braveheart Tegan.
Braveheart Tegan. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary.
I do a quiet. Himself.
I do a quiet one. She won't even hear it. Oh, damn, that was a bit louder than I expected.
I said it too, Adam.
Oh, go on then. I'll do a quiet one for you, Robert. Here we go. That's better, wasn't it?
Oh, excellent.
Surprise, surprise, the Doctor arrives fairly safely after a slight slip in time, which I didn't quite understand why they...
I don't understand that either, because she says 10 seconds in the future.
Yeah, and if it's in her future, she would already be there.
It's like ridiculous.
Anyway,
it doesn't matter. The science fiction fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
TV.
I was just about to say that. Anyway, so he's okay.
It reminded me of the Third Doctor Liz Shaw moment in that piece where they both.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. Yeah, well, Mary. Mary, you're worth a loud one. There we go. Right, back to Doctor Who. So
yeah,
when
I thought you were supposed to use the bell.
I did because it was Mary and she deserved it. So he does. Lang does tend to wave the gun in the Doctor's face quite. He just waves it. He doesn't sort of point it. He up and waves it in the Doctor's face quite a lot.
The glue gun, yes. The hot glue gun.
it's smaller than
it looks like.
Meanwhile, the twins are plotting some sort of almost like a
Who.
What would you call it? A mutiny. Yeah, but obviously Edgeworth says, "Well, I can kill you if I like, but I'm not going to." But and because I don't think they don't remember anything at the moment. They only remember who they are and what they got to do. They don't remember anything else, do they? Apart from I just said that bit. Yeah. So anyway, moving forward, there's this funny scene. So one of the crow people that they couldn't afford to put all the makeup on, got into a bit of trouble. And
feathers.
It's almost like a monk's outfit he's wearing. It's a very cheap costume. Anyway, he gets murdered by green beam, which apparently sort of enables embolism to happen in the body. Now, I did. I was looking up embolism on Google and stuff because I was wondering if you really would shake and go.
No,
nobody knew, so just have to accept that Doctor Who gets it right.
Well, they're talking about air embolism. There's different kinds of embolism.
Yeah, it's air embolism.
Talking about air embolism.
Yes,
as well.
And those would just once one of those hits your heart, you would die instantly.
Yeah,
you wouldn't go through all that writhing.
But what if it hits the brain, though, Mary? because it can hit the brain or the heart, can't it? And it'll kill you.
Well, it can, but the one you really worry about is the one that hits the heart.
Oh, okay. Mm.
The 20 megabyte embolism podcast.
Ah, but will we forget? Are these alien creatures? So maybe it would make them go, ah!
To bring it back to Doctor Who, he did say that, that it's the maximum punishment. But I get the feeling it's actually just his favorite punishment.
Yeah, that's what the doctor
everybody's
says.
Everybody's heard of it, so it's just like, no.
It's something new in Doctor Who, isn't it?
Not the embolism.
Anyways, the TARDIS arrives on another wasteland. The doctor steps outside and throws his arms out in another sort of dramatic exclamation.
But this time with sticks.
You could have been Mestor. Well done, Kirby. You get one. Well done. Yes, go on, then.
Believe it or not, this is a different quarry than the one they were in earlier.
Believe it or not, I don't really care. But the point is, the doctor steps out the TARDIS with his eyes shut. That's why he thinks he's in a... What? Why does she answer me? Sorry, I just got A-L-E-X-A just said no at me. I don't know if she just disagrees with what I'm saying. Is it because you said you called me Mestor? I don't know. Anyway, sorry, did I interrupt something? Oh, probably. Thanks. Terry Marsh just said kettle's on. I hope you're not referring to me, Terry.
We're diverting too much, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, so the doctor, it's not a nice, he thinks it's going to be a nice place that they're arriving at, but it's been destroyed by something or other.
Mestor?
Yes.
Yeah, this was the quarry we're seeing now was the quarry for the Dominators.
Yeah, that kettle's on comment was for you, Kirby. Thanks anyway.
Excuse me?
Yes, all right.
Earlier was the Three Doctors quarry.
Okay, that's a mildly interesting statement. Thank you very much. Right then, there's a point in which the Doctor is slightly rude to Lieutenant Lang, which, again, all Lieutenant. This sort of...
Lieutenant Lang.
But all this sort of... stuff the doctor's doing keeps on winding up Perry. She finds it quite irritating because she's moans about it and nags the poor bloke. No wonder
she is a bit of a whinger at times.
Giving him a real hard time trying to tell somebody who's like considerably older than her.
I think she preferred Peter Davison to tell you.
Yeah, I think she did. Terry Miles says, tea tastes nice. Again, I think that's referring to Kirby.
To be honest, she's had a long day. Because, to be honest, she hasn't slept since...
That's true.
Caves of Androzani.
Has she had a shower, though?
She hasn't slept since the previous story, either.
She had a haircut.
There to Caves of Androzani.
Her hair's slightly longer. And I'm just wondering whether she had a bath after she came out of the sea. I'd like to see whether she did or not. They didn't show that bit, did they?
Well, there is. They don't go straight from Planet of Fire to Androzani, do they? I mean, they go... straight, but there's no...
She's wearing the same clothes.
She was wearing the same clothes, though, so she did have a bath then.
Okay. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
She was wearing the same outfit, so the implication
is that she had a bath. When Turlough went for a whole season and a half without having any bath, wash, or change of clothes.
I just wondered if like Big Finish had jammed any stories in between that.
There we go.
Well, Big Finish certainly has.
Well, just for a laugh, they could have said had Turlough say, "Okay, Doctor, just before we go out, I'm just going for a quick shower and just put my clothes through the tumble dryer or whatever."
Yeah, I think Big Finish just stuck with four or five stories that have happened between Caves of Androzani and
Big Finish anyway.
Well, yeah, we were unaware of those at the time. Anyway, so what did I get up to? So they arrive in I think it's Gioconda now. The TARDIS arrives in a cave, and the Doctor moans about the way the TARDIS looks, which is a hint to Attack of the Cybermen when he tries to fix the chameleon circuit. That's just a heads up for the next story. I just wanted to make that reference because it needs to be made because next week. Anyway, back to the thing. Anyway, the Doctor looks there's some drawings on the wall which tells the story of Gioconda, which is quite interesting, which reminded me of a story from the John Pertwee era where they...
Excellent City.
Pardon? Colony in Space. Oh, was it the Colony in Space? It was Colony in Space, yes.
Colony
in Space. Yeah. I just thought I'd mention that. But anyway, moving forward. Would be quite Michael interesting. Bryan. What's the same people, really?
Colostomy in space?
Colony in space. Oh, wait. Right, so they start, well, we talk about these gastropod thingies and slugs and stuff. Lieutenant Lang gets his foot caught in their slime.
Lieutenant.
I have a problem with...
He could with take his feet out of his boot.
That's what I was going to say. Why couldn't he just slip his foot out of his boot? Unless he liked his boots too much.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
How's that covered by the... It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Yeah, Gabby.
That doesn't work on that one, does it? Because it's not science fiction. It's just a boot stuck in some super glue slime.
As the slime gets harder, it actually contracts, and it contracted around his foot and the boot, thereby squeezing it in really tight, and so he couldn't get his foot out.
Have you had a word with the writer, Ian?
Are we good? Are we good? Can we move on?
We're good.
God.
I'm freaking up, worried.
Right. Lee Anthony Davis says, not a good start for Baker in his first adventure, The Twin Dilemma, because it followed the case of Androzani and projected himself badly when he when strangling his assistant, and his costume was a bad idea. Lillian Robin says, Perry did change outfits. Did she? I remember her changing outfits when she changed from the bikini into the one she was wearing at the end of Planet of Fire. But I thought she had the same outfit.
Between Planet of Fire and Caves.
But we were talking about, Lillian, we were talking about whether she had a shower or not and why they didn't show that scene.
We're talking about between the end of Caves and the beginning of this. And if you run this back, you can see it's a different outfit.
Yeah. She wears a blue skirt and the... is it blue skirt or blue?
I don't know.
Blue top, blue check.
I glaze over what she's actually wearing, I'm afraid. Anyway, can I get
during the regeneration scene, it looks like it's a pink outfit. Yeah, it's a pink outfit.
Okay. Yeah, Terry Miles says slim mint. He says, so anyway, back to Doctor Who. All right, then. hang on. He uses his, I think it's some sort of laser thing to shoot his foot out of the slime.
No, it's his water pistol. He's still using the water pistol.
Oh, is it?
Well, it could have been the hot glue gun.
Meanwhile,
the hot glue.
Meanwhile, Mestor actually manages to get out of his little throne room to have a conversation with Edgeworth.
Edgeworth.
And the Doctor and his team sort of edge their way to the... to the room where it's all happening. The Doctor strides in and says, hang on, let's see if I can get that sound bite, bear with. I do love this aspect of the show. Here we go, here it comes.
Villain! Murderer! Doctor!
Out
of hands on your head!
Basically, he athletically jumps across various articles of set and starts throttling Warris Denham. But he didn't get a mirror shone in his face for this particular bit, but it was quite funny. So, meanwhile, Perry gets arrested and taken in front of Mestor. I can't remember what a crime is. Is it espionage or something like that? Usually is, isn't it, when it comes to doctors and doctors' companions? When they
spying, all that kind of stuff.
Of course he's going to die. And this particular bit of news is fed to the Doctor, who says, hang on, so I can get the sound bite. Here we go.
Perry!
Who says,
Perry!
Yeah.
And then they play it back next week and it looks totally ridiculous as it seems.
Perry! But she's okay. Her contract has still got a few stories left, so she's fine.
Colin's only got a few stories left.
Bit harsh. We've got more than Nicola Bryant has. In fact, there wasn't that many more than she had in total, was it? If I think so. Did two stories before Baker came in. How many more stories were left after she left? It was two or three, wasn't it? I can't remember.
I think.
Yeah, only just because the last one was a two-part. Anyway, so at one point, Edgeworth, who's starting to soften a bit, takes the polo mints off the wrists of the twins. Now, what got me the twins They were sat in front of a couple of little 1980s games consoles. I think I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Yeah.
Like a Pac-Man console.
Or the Pac-Man ones. Yeah, I remember we used to play those then.
Yeah, my dad had one of them when I first met
him. Well, there's those car ones as well with the kind of scrolling sort of track.
Yeah, that's quite a pointless use of currently available games.
Tech.
Good word, yes, tech. Anyway. By this stage, I forgot to mention this, the Doctor, after that last sort of funny turn he had when he goes to throttle Edgeworth, he then becomes, he doesn't have any more funny turns after that. He is now the Doctor. Now, there's a scene in which he's spanning, another scene in which he's standing on the table, but he brings down this sort of astro diagram from the ceiling. Mm. And when he did that, that reminded me, for some reason, when it first appeared, of the... various scenes from Iron Man 1 and 2 when Iron Man is sort of flicking around these 3D diagrams, and then I realised it was actually just a few sort of hula hoops with some various sports balls attached to them. But
don't spoil things.
What do you mean?
But it is kind of a neat little hula shot hoops that they set up.
They pull
you down into the shot with this whole manoeuvre, and it's actually quite clever, I think.
Yeah, it's quite good. And also... The idea they had, wasn't it, was this is when they revealed that the mathematics of the twins was going to enable them to have the planets on in the same place at the same time.
Different days.
Yeah.
I still don't know how that was supposed to work.
No, I think Christopher H. Bidmead was not consulted on the making of this particular story.
Master,
he was shaking his head the entire time.
So
Master,
yes.
Where did you guys get only a couple more episodes? She's got 8 more stories after this.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's
you're getting confused, Kirby. What I was saying was, somebody, was it you that said that she only did a couple of stories less than Colin Baker himself, or was that me? Probably was me, actually.
It wasn't me.
Did about the same time, really.
Because pretty sure she did two stories of Trial of the Time Lord.
Yes.
And then there were another...
She did two stories of Trial of the Time Lord. And then there were only 2 after that.
There were 3 after that, wasn't there?
Yeah. And
2 four-parters and a one-parter.
No.
No?
There was Mysterious Planet, Mind Warp, Poison, Ultimate Foe.
But she had two full stories before.
Two full stories before Colin Baker came into it, and then Colin Baker only had 2 full stories after Perry left. So therefore, they had the same amount of stories.
So they did exactly the same number of stories.
All right, smarty pants.
All good.
It was more or less what I was saying, and so that's now. And we can say to Terry, you can now come back from the kitchen and get your. There's a fly in there.
Pedantic.
So I'll just get my fly swatter ready, because there's a fly buzzing around. I might end up with a dead fly in my screen.
Do it up, please.
Right. Anyway, that took about half an hour just to talk about the fact that he's got this diagram that isn't going to work. But there you go. It's science fiction, fantasy TV, isn't it? Mestor decides that they're going to confiscate the TARDIS and is able to open the TARDIS remotely with a green fuzz. That's never been done before or since, has it? Remarkable.
I love how they didn't even need to have Mestor on
camera
for it. He just did it remotely.
Yeah.
And it's like, because you can't move the costume.
No.
Because he's so powerful mentally, he can do it.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't need to go there. I can just do it from here.
Right.
He's stuck in his own slime trail.
Yes. Anyway, meanwhile, there's a room containing lots of polystyrene thingies that are apparently eggs, gastropod eggs.
They're Tic Tacs.
Giant Tic Tacs.
Yeah, big Tic Tacs.
Yes. And there's a corridor, there's a window. It was a bit daft, was it? They had this little room containing a handful of these eggs. Yet yonder this door was a vast sort of tunnel where there were millions of these eggs. What I did like, though, was the concept that they were going to blow up this... They were going to put these into the sun, weren't they? So then blow it up, or Mestor was. And then this, therefore, the explosion, because they were heat-resistant or whatever, was going to send all these little tic-tacs all around the universe. I thought that was quite a clever idea, actually. A bit over the top.
The plan was to bring those two smaller planets into orbit, they would actually crash into the sun. The sun would explode.
Because of gravity, they don't have the gravity to hold
there
the orbit.
By blasting Jaconda with heat and sending it out into the...
Which is more or less what I
said.
But
they didn't, ridiculous. They didn't have enough hula hoops to do it.
Lee Anthony Davis says Baker redeemed himself when he started doing audios as the Doctor.
That's what a lot of people say.
Bollocks. That's bollocks.
I enjoyed
Baker
the
was Baker was fine. Yeah. Big Finish redeemed the character by allowing Colin to actually play it the way he wanted to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, but the story that he tells is that he was planning on being the Doctor longer than they let him. Yeah. Yeah. Because that was the plan. That was the plan all along, was that he would be softening as he learned more and more how to interrelate with humans and all that. But they ended his time before he could get there.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, so, you know, he was always good.
Yes, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, just, definitely.
He was never allowed.
Commanding, he was commanding, as we needed to be anyway. So anyway, so moving forward a little bit, they try to make their escape, and then the Doctor has made some sort of, he's got something he's hiding behind the back his back that looks a bit like Tabasco sauce. When he goes and has a meeting with
Slug killer.
It's not just
salt. Doesn't look like a urine sample.
Yeah,
a urine sample for somebody who really needs to be in hospital.
As males, urine.
Here's something I prepared earlier.
Yeah.
It's fresh. It's all foamy.
Yeah, we just put salt on them, slugs and snail. Well, not snails, because we like
snails. Just get a bag of salt.
Yeah. Anyway, so now he tries to throw this Tabasco sauce over Mestor, but he's able to throw some strange.
Wasn't
blue.
That a good effect though?
Yeah, not too bad. Better than the effect they used with the little dots. Wasn't
I mean,
it?
Not the blue laser type effect, but when the thing just.
I thought the blue laser thing was okay. I think they were trying to sort of make it look a bit like giant lightsabers, which was acceptable to a degree.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that he does rather, this is Mestor, does rather sort of gloat to the fact that he can protect himself with these sort of things. And then I'm trying to move. Oh, yes, that's right. That funny scene when the Doctor, this is used my quote, he says he's going to kill the Doctor, and the Doctor said, oh, embolism, I suppose. then he has to sort of say to
is
everybody
what
embolism
is. Is that your sixth Doctor, Adam?
Yes. I am known as the Doctor. That's my sixth Doctor. That's quite good, actually, I think. It's better than all my other versions of the Doctor. Then, unfortunately, we see the scene. Like I say, Maurice Denham is perfect in this story, apart from his attempts to mime Mestor's words.
Oh, that's awful.
Doesn't work.
I've got to imagine it was the stage direction he was given to, like, pretend you're a slug, you know, make it look like you're gonna. I don't know, because it's like I can't give any kind of rational explanation as to why he gives such a wonderful performance and then go.
Let's hope that's really the case. Kirby, did you watch the what they call those things, info text on this story when you watched it?
No, I did not.
What?
I previously what? Have.
You previously have.
I didn't have time this time around. And back in 2014, when we discussed this, I vowed I'd never watch this story again.
Well, that didn't work out for you, did it? So,
actually,
for some reason,
if I had time this week, work has been crazy.
Okay.
I would probably have watched both the infotext and listened to the commentary.
Pretty sure that's
wow.
I'm
so
pretty sure
this
Kirby
commentary is really
Kirby,
good.
Kirby,
I've
Kirby,
heard it before.
Mestor?
Kirby, I'm Mestor? Pretty sure that excuse is on page 16 of the original Rhys Parsons' Book of Excuses.
Mm-hmm.
Just which volume?
Yeah, volume one. That's a very early excuse of Reese's. Right then, so because Edgeworth, Ismael or whatever his name is trying to contain the mind of because Mestor tries to say he's going to take over the Doctor's body, but Doctor says, "Oh no, you're not." But
you have Ismael's mind.
Ismael sort. It's a very Time Lordy name, isn't it, Ismael? Not quite. Anyway, while doing that, the Doctor throws a tobacco sauce over the what you would, the body of Mestor, and Mestor dies, and so does
Edgeworth. I'm melting.
But then he seems perfectly all right when he gives the Doctor his strange ring, but it looks a little bit like, remember the thing that the tap head that Turlough had. Just but it's been painted.
The crystal.
Yeah. Anyway, he gives the Doctor and he dies. And when they keep calling each other old friend, it's just to emphasise the fact they are old friends, even though we've never seen this. I think that actually both actors did rather well in conveying the fact they did previously know each other, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, everybody, all the other parts of the story start unraveling up. Then we get some crowing noises from some of the birds. The Chamberlain's quite
unraveling
funny.
Unraveling up.
Yeah. There's a funny scene in which the Doctor sort of, because the Chamberlain goes on his knees to pray that the Doctor can take him home or take him away. The Doctor says, nope. And then Hugo decides to stay back, and after flirting big time with Perry, stays and... almost, I suppose,
there was nothing for
implies he was going to become the king of Jocunda. The Doctor
now,
takes...
This is a perfect chance for a revisit, you know?
Yeah, you well, you mean Big Finish? Have they not done that, then?
No.
Mary would know.
I don't think so.
Mary would know what?
Yeah. Whether they've done a Big Finish story on Jocunda. I'd say no. I think
you're
she would
all
have mentioned
talking it. Over each other. What?
All right, let me say it, Mary.
Yes.
Have they done? Are they revisited Jocunda in Big Finish?
No.
I have to say I don't know. I have not heard all the stories, so I don't know.
They haven't.
Right. Lee Anthony Davis says, "I wasn't impressed with the costume that Edwin Richfield wore as Nestor." But Maurice Denham played his role brilliantly. So we can concur with that. But this scene here was a bit irritating. I'm just going to play it now. I found it slightly irritating. It's very, very cheesy.
The Doctor.
Oh, not that bit. Sorry.
Whether you like it.
No, it's not that bit. It's a slight... Yeah, this is slightly before that. Sorry.
This is live
podcasting at its worst. Here we go. Let's try again.
I am the Doctor. Whether you like it. Or not.
It's the cheesy smile bit. I almost threw up in my mouth when I watched it the first time.
Are you lucky he didn't wink as well?
So there you go, that's a twin dilemma. Now, I will just say before, obviously in the usual format that I go and ask everybody else what they think of it, and I think it happens every time I watch this story, I dislike it less. There are elements of it that we can put down to a poor budget, the fact it bounced after the case of Androzani, and there are obviously the usual slight silliness and science difficulties within the story itself. But on the whole, it's quite good, to be fair. I don't see why people slate it so much. It's not that bad. It's nowhere near as bad as they paint it to be. And Colin Baker is magnificent. He's always magnificent in anything he does, to be fair. He's a superb actor. A very, very nice man. Very generous man.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, that doesn't convey in the fact of the Doctor. But all round, Colin Baker is an absolute star. Obviously, we've still got Nicola Bryant, Perry, it's a bit annoying in this story, and she does continue to be a little bit annoying, not in a way that you don't like the character, but it's just she is...
Probably the way she's written, I think.
It's the way she really respect the Doctor enough, for me personally.
No.
And she really doesn't respect the Doctor at all throughout the whole story. But, yeah, I think it's okay. It's not the best, it's not the worst at all. I look at this story with a great deal of fondness, to be fair. I never get bored while watching it. The only things that make me cringe are the terrible cliffhangers, and even the one right at the end, you know. But the rest of it's okay, to be fair. What do you think about it, Robert?
I can't really remember when I first watched it what I thought of it, to tell you the truth. But one thing that I do remember was people were up in arms about the way the Doctor was acting, and they were expecting him to always act like this, you know, terrible ogre. And as we know, that softened.
Yeah.
But I will say something. When Conbaker had initial discussions with JNT as to how they were going to, how he's going to play the Doctor. He was originally going to be, you know, if there was a joyous situation, he'd be really sad, or if there was a sad situation, somebody would die and he'd be acting really happy.
Yeah.
And I think they tried to have some sort of compromise, but a lot of people were a bit alienated by his, as you're saying, you know, with the strangling bit, which at the time was, you know, considered so bad.
Mm.
But I just put it down to the fact, well, he's newly regenerated. Of course, he's going to have these fits or yeah. whatever, you know. And he was just settling into the regeneration. That's all.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, as has already been mentioned, he settled straight into the role. He put his stamp on it. He may have not been helped by his coat somewhat,
no.
Or indeed the entire outfit. But he, I think, I just got used to it, you know.
Yeah.
And because, you know, his acting shone through, and he's got a very good presence about
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right.
And, I did think some of the, I mean, a lot of this dialogue is just so quotable, though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like, you know, the twins saying, so why don't you stop worrying, buzz off and enjoy your evening out.
Yeah.
Or, ah, noble brow, clear yes. gaze, a yeah. face beaming with vast intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, the Doctor's always good at these wondrous sort of lines and speaking words you'd never heard of before. But, I did think it was a bit let down budget-wise. I think they should have maybe saved this for the next season.
Maybe.
Like they usually do. And
yeah.
It just seems weird to have it sort of like tagged on at the end after such a great story.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was surprised watching it again that, you know, I didn't hate it as much as I thought I would. And I think when I first got the DVD about 10 years ago or so, I remember thinking, oh, you know, after such a bad rep that it's got, I mean, it usually scores very low in viewers' figures.
Yeah.
But I ended up enjoying it. And, yeah. You know, despite Womulus and Wemus, and silly lines like, thou craggy knob.
that was one of my alternate quotes.
Yeah. Or may my bones rot for obeying it. I mean, silly things like that, but yeah, maybe the script could have been had a little bit of work, and yeah, silly plot, but yeah, it's enjoyable enough, and
it's
not nearly as bad as people make out.
No, it isn't.
And, yeah.
Well, Lee Anthony Davis says it's thumbs up for your review. He's referring to my review, so I'll point out, but yours was pretty good, Robert. To be fair, Ian, what did you think?
I hated it every second. Well, here, I'll just preface this by everybody, I'm guessing, saw this, saw Colin Baker this way first. I didn't meet the Sixth Doctor in the same way you did in the UK, because in New Zealand we were way behind in Doctor Who, and they played his Dalek story for us.
Oh.
During the 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
So we got to see Silver Revelation. Nemesis and Revelation
yeah.
as a kind of peek into the future. So that was my introduction.
Revelation
to
Colin. Is so good.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so I got to see him full force Doctor boom right away.
Yeah.
So but I gotta agree with you guys. It's like the more and more I watch it, the more and more I see that's good.
Mm.
And the rest is just down to 80s TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The wobbly sets, that's what they can afford, man. the one thing that does bother me, and kind of now that I watch it again, is, okay, on Jacunda, they've got a huge, huge mural of exactly what they went down in their past.
Yes.
These slug creatures that came from eggs, and they destroyed the planet and everything, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So a slug creature shows up one day, right, having survived, and they're like, come on in. just have a seat.
Yeah, but didn't he control them with his green fluffy mind?
They keep Slugula around as well.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's like, wouldn't you be protected for, you know, like have a lot of salt on hand, just running around the border?
But he's going to put those blue lights up to stop the salt from hitting him, isn't he? Because he's got that powerful mind, is he?
Yeah. I mean, there's a big honking mural saying, this might have happened before.
Yeah.
And the only thing that caught them was a big old fire.
Yeah, but the thing is, to be topical, Ian, there was a thing that happened in 1917, the Spanish flu, which might have told people that it's something similar to what's happening now has happened before. And is anybody taking notice of it? Well, maybe some people are.
You've got a very good point.
I think it's true of the human condition. We are constantly repeating wars and pandemics and all that, you know, because we don't seem to want to learn from our past.
No, everybody's always some sort of conspiracy theory or nothing's really happening. It's all made up and people are making a big deal out of it and it's a media con and stuff like that. People all sort of make an excuse if they've got a strange sort of mind, but most people are okay. But I think that might explain part of the reason why they may have let Mestor control them.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, everything that I don't like is just the abilities of the day. But when you get involved in Doctor Who and learn about the show and the difficulties and the budget how, I mean, even this production I think they had a strike in the middle of it. They said it was miserably cold on all those locations. They had to wear plastic bags on their feet and everything. It's just like the terrible conditions that they're making the show on. And it's just like, you know what? It's not that bad. It's not that bad. It's actually, and it's like, I wish they'd let Colin Baker lay on furniture more often. When you're talking to him next, you go and ask him about that, because I don't know if anybody's ever asked him about this thing that happened in the Twin Dilemma when he was just like, he just laid on things and I loved it. It was a very Tom Baker kind of thing to do, where he would just like sprawl onto furniture.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that was mainly to get him into camera because he was so tall.
Yeah. No, thank you, Ian. Right then, Kirby, what did you think?
Mestor.
What?
Okay, like I said, we talked about this one 6 years ago.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Right.
And
Did I?
Yes.
I
think so. I can check the database, but I'll check later.
Yeah, don't worry about that bit for the moment.
Anyway, 6 years ago, I also vowed, as we were talking about it, that I would never watch it again. Uh-oh. Ever.
Was that the first time you'd seen it, though, Kirby?
It was the first and a partial.
Okay.
It was several years before when I got the DVD. I tried watching it and stopped very quickly.
Okay.
Well, guess what?
Uh-oh.
I'm beginning to like it.
Oh. Is that because you've been watching them all in order?
Yes, because I'm watching them in order. And also, I guess just watching it a few more times, it's not that bad.
It isn't that bad. It's not pretty.
It's not that bad at all. And like Ian was saying, It's the way that they made the show. It's their budget. Yeah, the scenery was wobbly. Have you seen the behind the scenes of how Television Center worked? They put these things up overnight.
Yeah.
And they did some amazing stuff with it. And the science fiction stuff sometimes looked a little bit cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
But the story was fine.
Yeah.
So I've completely changed.
Wow.
Hallelujah. Come on.
Oh, go on then. He's always wanted one of these.
Hallelujah. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
No.
he doesn't get that very often.
No, he doesn't, no. Cherish it, Kirby. Right, you're done.
Yes, I'm done.
Okay, everybody, brace yourselves, strap yourselves in, and here we go. All right then, Mary, go on then.
Well, watching this is just a shock in so many ways. I mean, welcome to the 80s. You've got the offensive neon colors. You've got the metallic materials. You know, you've either got the big hair or you've got, you know, the very flat, shiny hair. Mm. And everything's wrapped in aluminum foil. And we have JNT, you know, running the show in all of his glory. So what's to like is my question.
Oops.
I tried to look, we've all been spoiled because we've all listened to Big Finish stories with Colin Baker. Most of us have met him and had a chance to talk with him and find him to be a lovely person.
Yep.
So I tried to watch this through the eyes of the people who were, you know, at the time. And thanks to the fact that we're on this journey, I'm able to, because I got, you know, a constant dose of Davison before this particular episode. And I can see why, for the longest time, this was the most hated episode, because everything that could be offensive was here, including, you know, the colors, the shininess, the brazenness of the whole thing, and Colin Baker being the kind of doctor that he came across in this.
Yeah.
I could see that everybody was offended by everything in this. And it's taken time for it to distill and for people to refer back to it and see that, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know, this isn't so bad. But I have to say, and it was not very well directed. The scenes were mostly very static scenes. And as Ian said, the way the doctor was throwing himself around, it was probably the most interesting thing going on. Particularly the death of Ishmael, that went on and on and on, you know, forever. So,
have you seen the death of Peter Capaldi? And they went off about two stories, right? What about David Tennant?
We'll get to that. We'll get to that, actually. the garishness, the loudness of everything, the almost violent change from what we saw before. I understand where people were then. Plus, this thing is showing, like, on Saturday nights when your key audience isn't even home to watch it. The only people really watching it are the fans, the people who've stuck around and have a soft spot in their hearts for it. Mm. So, yeah, they were very offended, you know, to see this. So I understand them then, and even now as I watch it, it's not the worst Doctor Who episode I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. We'll get to some of those, but it's not one that I would probably watch again.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Can I say something?
Something in the way she moves. Oh, say it, not sing it. Carry on then.
No, did you find it a bit funny? They had a statue of a frog.
I didn't notice that.
Did you notice that throughout the...
I didn't notice.
No.
No, where was the frog?
They zoom in on it quite a few times. It's got the frog head on a body.
Is it like the frog in that story with the blind girl in Norway?
No, this is a big frog.
Oh, it's a big frog. Okay.
One thing, I guess until Mary mentioned it, I guess I hadn't noticed that they'd switched back to Saturdays because the previous couple of years
it was doing it on twice a week.
Yeah, but this story wasn't on a Saturday. The subsequent stories. Was it?
I checked.
Oh. Okay. Anyway.
That's what when Mary mentioned that, I went back, checked the broadcast dates, and I checked a calendar. It was a Saturday.
Okay. Anyway, Lillian Robin says JNT in his Hawaiian shirts. In fact, indeed, he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt when me and Alistair and Colin had the picture taken in Bessie. I should have perhaps tried to get a picture of me with JNT, to be fair, but he was too busy flirting with various security guards. Pardon?
A bit hard now.
Oh, very funny. Right, let's get some feedback done. Kirby, I think we'll start with your is it a plea for feedback? Was it a begging message?
Hang on, let me get there.
Oh, come on, we do this every week and you're still not ready. This is appalling.
Every week.
Hang on, just let me have it ready, for goodness sake. Open up another window. Is your computer a little bit lax for opening up several windows?
Fine.
Oh, it's fine, is it? Okay.
It's fine. It's just that when I get to that part, I've got to excuse. Open up all of the comments excuses. And continues and
excuse number three comments. That yeah, is actually in book one of Reece Barton's Book of Excuses.
I said time four feedback.
Yeah, whatever. Right. I've actually got it up on the screen now, Kirby. So it's, in all the time you've had to actually get it up on the
screen.
Oh, it's ready now. Go on then.
Alan C. Butcher says, a solid story with just two major flaws, pictured above with Maurice Dim. Robert Wince Jr. has a picture of Colin Baker, the sixth doctor.
That's a great photo.
Going, what should I wear?
Hmm.
He also has
a dress.
Harry the doctor. Now you just look dreadful. Yuck. And Robert Haynes just mentioned me in a comment.
Yeah, stop it, Robert, please.
Okay, Robert Wince Jr., my review of The Twin Dilemma. Found an old copy of the story on this tape called VHS.
Hey.
The story was meh for me. Colin Baker was an okay doctor, but I only liked a few of his stories. This was not one of them. I didn't care for the twins Romulus and Remus.
Romulus and Remus. Get it right, Kirby.
Yes.
And the knowledge that they had to help master the slug with turning the planet into an incubator for the eggs to hatch them. The doctor has regeneration sickness with his emotions going up and down because of the poison from the previous experience from caves.
I see. Good excuse.
Yeah.
I didn't like him putting Perry in danger and almost strangling her. I did like finding out that Edgeworth... Go ahead, Ian, say it.
Edgeworth.
Was another time for it's sad that he was on his last regeneration and died at the end saving the people of their planet. It was like the first Doctor finding out the Time Meddler was one of his own kind.
Yeah.
I understand what Colin was trying to do with this Doctor, but he ran out of time. This is... starting to be the beginning of the end of Doctor Who being so-called rested after Sylvester run, rating 2.5 out of 5.
Okay.
Laurie Nix says, 60's introduction and much of his run to me is all about not being sure if the bubbles provided were those in a glass of champagne or a purgative. I've come to appreciate
That's
it.
A bit nasty.
I've come to appreciate him more over the years, as I tend to like cranky doctors over the too nicey variety, but recall upon first seeing him being intrigued yet appalled. Wait, didn't I say that about Perry?
Mm.
She who all aliens/villains must find pleasing. Regarding this story, there was a lot of WTF and silly alien creatures and old friend yet foe Time Lord who rules a planet. Someone explain that to me. And those annoying twins from everyone's high school computer class. Much to be distracted by over a convoluted yet thin plot, toss a bunch of ideas together and add a slug. I did quite enjoy the cameo by Peter Gabriel in his Games Without Frontiers, though regardless of the purple water pistol he was pointing at everyone. Size doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, nice one, Laurie. That's really, really good. Well done.
King.
All right, go on, him. That was really good.
And you just got in trouble.
Eh? No. I'll explain that it's probably one of the best bits of feedback we've ever had, and she'll accept that.
Neil James says, The Twin Dilemma. Oh, no. Now, I love Doctor Who and take no joy in slagging it off, but this is horrendous. The script is dull, the direction is lackluster, the music is forgettable, the characters are boring, and the acting is shocking. The whole story looks cheap and nasty, particularly those awful bird heads. They were okay.
I thought they were the best part, but no, they weren't.
Romulus and Weemus are inexcusable, as is the Sixth Doctor's ludicrous outfit. Colin Baker plays the character so utterly unlikable and over the top that I feel sorry for Nicola Bryant, who must have been missing Peter Davison a lot at this point. Edgeworth is a sweet old fellow, and the location work is okay. The crashed spaceship on fire looks really good.
On the fire.
Other than that, I am struggling. I have no idea what the program makers were thinking with this. The fact that this was in the same season as Caves, Resurrection, and The Awakening blows my mind. Painful. 1 star out of 5.
Well, at least it's one.
the next two.
Yes, we'll leave that. Well, thank you. Read. Well done, Kirby. I'm going to actually add someone live on the show to who's actually I've had a request for entry by somebody called Sparky Dalton. I said, well, he hasn't actually answered any of the appropriate questions, but so I sent him a message asking him why he didn't answer any of the appropriate questions. He said the group was recommended to him by a friend, so he's going to be improved prior to getting kicked out if he misbehaves. Right then, so we're going to move on to more feedback. We have Terry Miles, who says, hi, Adam, Mary, Debbie, Kirby, and everybody else. That means you, Ian. Everybody else, but
yay, me.
I'm
so glad he was thinking of
it. Yeah. I have been dreading this one, but watched it with my wife, not saying anything about how I feel or felt about it. So, well, that's dedication. That's dedication of our listeners, stroke viewers. I kept quiet for the four episodes, then asked how she felt. Lynn thought it was a stupid story, but she liked Colin's portrayal this time, having seen the last story. She said she enjoyed his performance this time round.
Seashells.
All right. Thank you very much. I tell you what, the other thing is very good at delivering dialogue. There was a very complicated line that Colin delivered during the performance that I tried to say myself, but I couldn't even get the words out. I can't remember what the words were. I wish I hadn't said that now. Anyway, back to the feedback. I myself found it a lot better than all the other times I've watched it, as now I know the scripts he was provided with were rubbish. I've heard a lot more of Colin in Big Finish stories and read most of the Missing Adventures stories with Colin in them. His acting in the Big Finish stories proves he is a very credible doctor. I have seen Colin in a local theatre acting a straight role in Run For Your Wife. He even called me a Doctor Who geek when he signed some of my Doctor Who books. Lovely chap. I feel he is nearly as good as my Doctor Tom, who I have also had the honour of meeting. Jealous! The other members of the Twin Dilemma cast were all very wooden. Morris Denham was. But that was to be expected as they were under the control of a giant slug. I suppose that's true. Saying that it doesn't excuse the twins acting like trees. Harsh. But thank you, Terry. Keep it coming. Right.
So she said.
Right, hang on, just put my bell over here because it's getting in my way. I need to, if I put my mug there and I put my bell there, I'm just worried about knocking my mug onto the floor and therefore ruining all my DVDs. Right then, so the next bit of feedback is heralded by this sound.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Captain.
The Twin Dilemma by Anthony Stephen. Xenium. You know what that means. The twins declare that they are going to play equations, but the world will still exist afterwards. Like Megopolis, in this story, reality is a property of mathematics, not the other way around, even though they don't have stars for mathematical excellence. Anyone here want to wring Perry's neck? Why didn't he strangle the twins? The dilemma in the title is which twin to throttle first. The doctor fears he has regenerated, but then fears he has degenerated. You will suffer the maximum penalty. Death by overacting. What the doctor says about the sun exploding if you move the planet is a load of nonsense.
Yeah.
The plan was for the sixth doctor to become more likeable over the years. They thought he had years. Alexa, what is filler?
Filler is usually defined as a person or thing that fills, makes full.
Right then. Alexa, tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
I really, really, really want a zig-a-zigar.
Bye for now.
I do love the way he puts in the special sound effect to stop setting off my one, but
thank you, Ian. Remember, I've got one right next to this TV I use for podcasts.
Yeah, I'm talking about Amazon devices, and I don't really want to envisage what you've got next to your blooming desk at the moment, Kirby. Thank you very much. All right, then.
I've got a Fire tablet.
Oh. I bet you have. That's what she said. Right, then. Mary, I've sent...
Use the same word.
Yes, thank you very much. All right, thank you, Kirby. Mary?
Yes?
I've sent you something lovely, haven't I?
Yes, you did.
You should have sent it to Ian.
Nah.
Yeah.
No, okay.
That's not very nice. He'll never come back on the show. Actually, no, he'll never come back on the show anyway, will he? Okay, well, we'll still...
Yeah, I was going to say, who said I was coming back?
Go on, Mary.
Okay. This is from Ellen T. Butcher. Okay, Jaconda? No, she got it wrong of her own accord, or a far from sluggish start. Dear 20 megabiters, the twin dilemma is, of course, a closely studied demonstration of the difficult political positions and decisions taken by people of goodwill in exceptionally hard times. For Asmael, the threat to his adopted planet where he is living out his final days is all important, and he is clearly willing to compromise his attested decent proclivities to commit kidnap, coercion, and even accept casualties, though he may avoid being their direct cause. Time to take a breath. However, there is a message here that in taking the strain of this behavior, he is capable of missing some basic astrophysical issues. Further to this, the malignancy that he is trying to cope with turns out to be worse than he initially comprehended. As such, it is clear that Mestor and his gastropods could be taken to be representative of a natural threat, such as climate, or a systematic threat, such as untrammeled capitalism. The resolution of the story relies on the doctor's capacity to perceive the truth, his confidence, his willingness to apply his mind to the problem, and to take direct action, as well as the harsh reality of the commitment and loss required of Asmael along the way. Take another breath. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that this is the worst story in the history of Doctor Who,
incorrect.
They're simply out of their minds, and this is, in fact, a solid mid-range story which is wrapped up the most striking and impressive introduction to a new Doctor that there is, and a self-assured, wide-ranging performance from our new lead actor.
Yes.
We also learn that Decider Logan had a son while he was posing as the Emperor Tiberius, who actually survived to become a sort of space policeman who encountered a gastropod after faking his own death from a gastric complaint to get out of being poisoned and changing his name from Castor to Hugo. After a time rebuilding Jaconda, he later moved to East Chiem. I don't know what East Chiem is.
Nor do I.
Okay. All in all, the Twin Dilemma is an impressive start for the Sixth Doctor and a dramatic demonstration of acting from one of the best casting decisions ever made in Doctor Who.
Correct.
Colin Baker immediately grasps a bold new direction and turns the Doctor into an exceptional character rather than just another guy in the room who looks like getting his head chopped off at the drop of a hat. Not every member of the cast provides a perfect performance, and the dilemma mentioned in the title may have been whether there was a way to edit out the footage of the twins without harming the story, or whether to harm the story by leaving them in the cut. However, Maurice Denham brings a bit of class, and the Jacondans put on a delightfully prosaic tone, which nicely counterpoints the surrealism of their weird look. Kevin McNally doesn't give a career best here, but is serviceable, and Perry comes over as a very strong character, not taking her difficult circumstances meekly or without kicking back at them. Mestor, as a villain, shows that a lot better can be achieved with a highly limited but imposing costume than they did with the Gravis just a few months before.
Yeah.
This story is perhaps 18 episodes too short, as it was madness to adjunct this story onto the end of a season, series, or year, leaving a gap before further developments are seen, and therefore leaving the feeble-minded left in confusion over such a dramatic change in the central character. Next up, Doctor Who and the Return of the Cyberplots, or The Expanding Cyber Controller. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Marvellous, and I do love the way he deliberately leaves out the punctuation just so you have to work out where you're going to breathe there, Mary.
And because it just goes on and on, a bit like the story does.
Well, I'm glad to say we do indeed have enough time for another edition of You Won't Get This One.
I won't.
Right then, I'd better explain the rule. Actually, Ian did say he'd listened to one of the episodes and managed to come out the other side alive, so well done, Ian. Do you understand the rules of the quiz?
No.
Well, I have a pile of Trivial Pursuit questions that are Doctor Who themed. Here they are. I'm going to do the sound effect. There they are. They come in categories as thus. Time Lords, Companions, Episodes and Stories, Years and Dates, Monsters, or Cast, Crew and Beyond. I have a dice with the categories on it in front of me, which I roll. Each player has a joker. The joker, if they answer the question correctly and nominate the joker while after they've heard the question, they get double points. The first 1 to 6 wins, and also there'll be a bonus pot. The twist with the bonus pot is you answer the question if you know it, you don't actually earn the points yourself, but you can take points off or give points to one of the other players, depending on what my Amazon friend decides, whether it's a, but you won't know until after you.
A-L-E-X-A.
Yeah, all right, thank you. I'll have to turn the light on, it's getting dark in here. Alexa, front room light on today. Alexa, wakey wakey.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah, I know. Alexa, front room light on.
A few things. Oh, Jesus Christ. Front light.
I said front room. Hooray. I don't want the fire on, you idiot. Alexa, front room fire off.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
Alexa,
oh
Alexa,
you know what this sounds
front
like?
Room this fire like off.
Bloody a few things
shared.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Which one did you want?
Right, Alexa.
This is like Frank Spencer.
Front room off.
A few things share the name room.
Right,
which one
that's it.
My
where's my bloody phone gone?
You see it, and when it turns
before the house burns down. I think she's losing the plot today.
I couldn't understand that.
You don't tell me. Bloody hang on, right, devices. You can smell something burning. It's my house burning down because the fire's on in the middle of the summer. Run through the fire.
The thing is that my Alexa
it's
was
off.
Trying to do things, but I don't have front room or fire.
Well, I do, and it normally works. Right, then. That was quite stressful.
What are you talking about?
Good grief. Right, where was I after all that drama? I should have played some tension music over that.
We were starting the quiz.
Yeah, there's a fly in here as well, which is going to die.
And we're hoping that Ian memorized all that.
Oh, don't worry.
So the way I understand it, you're gonna ask us questions, and yeah. I can steal questions away from people and give people points for those.
Only on the bonus pot,
them, right?
Just play along. You'll pick it up as you go along. A reminder for listeners that Mary has been champion for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, Ian, can I say something?
All by default.
A question that he answers you, if you know the answer, play your joker beforehand.
Yes, so before you can't, if you know the answer, say joker and then the answer, if you want to. You don't have to, but it gives you an extra point. So, right then, so it's 1 to 6. Here we go, Mary's question. And you've got an orange one, Mary. And it's Cast, Crew and Beyond. And it's what connects the hip-hop star 50 Cent with the helicopter from the Damons?
I haven't the faintest idea.
I thought you might say that. Do you want me to say it again?
Yes.
What connects the hip-hop star 50 Cent with the helicopter from the Damons?
Oh, my goodness. No idea.
And I said I haven't the faintest idea.
Well, therefore, I shall insert that point into the bonus spot and give you the answer, which is the helicopter is called a G-Unit, and so was 50 Cent's rap group. So learn a new thing on this show every week, don't you?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I'll file it under,
And
quit getting
it, yes.
Ian.
Yes.
You've got an orange one, too. Okay.
Ooh,
which is Cast Crew and Beyond.
I didn't memorize the colors. I'm sorry.
It's Cast Crew and Beyond.
He'll tell you.
Okay.
Cast Crew and Beyond. This is the question. Pauline Collins has appeared in Doctor Who twice, once as Queen Victoria in Tooth and Claw, and once in The Faceless Ones alongside which Doctor?
Faceless Ones?
Come on.
The First Doctor.
It is what? The First Doctor, but you didn't play a Joker, so you only get a point.
Okay,
now, it wasn't the First Doctor. Sorry, that was... Second Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was the Second Doctor. Sorry, that was
a
Robert's
point.
Because I was no, you don't. Hang on, you
good.
Hang on. Let's rewind. Hang on. I've got to play the right sound effect first off, which is this one. All right. Another point goes into the bonus pot.
I was thinking, am I misremembering things? But you were saying, and Mestor, you are the Mestor.
Be quiet. I'm just trying to explain. Robert put me off because he was talking in the background when Ian was thinking about the answer, so I'm very tempted to deduct a point.
No. Don't.
Is that excuse in the Book of Excuses?
Right then, Robert. Oh, bloody hell. Why does it keep coming on orange? Right then. So Cast Crew and Beyond then, Robert. It's Kit Pedler is famous for helping to create the Cybermen. But what other technical... that's a tough word, isn't it? Technological terror based in the post office tower did he help create?
Can I play my Joker?
Yes.
Yes.
Wotan.
Indeed.
Say it.
2 points then, Robert.
Will operating well thought done. Analog.
Right then. So let's hope it doesn't end on orange.
I get a bonus point for saying what.
You're lucky to get that. Not point deducted after messing up the last bit. Right then. That's getting on my nerves now. Right, I'm going to go through the...
orange again.
Alexa, roll a dice.
I rolled a six-sided die in God.
Yeah? One. Right, okay. So one, therefore, be blue. Four. Who's it next? Kirby.
Mestor.
What was
Mestor.
The...
Mestor.
Robert.
Sorry.
He's trying to Mestor you up.
Ooh, yeah. Kirby. Well done. That was quite good. I like that. Right then. What was the name of the orphanage where the silence... Oh, see that word? So put it over a bit of orange text. Where the silence nested and raised River Song as a young girl.
I don't remember.
Don't remember. Therefore, I have to do this. Would anybody like to answer just for the...
Mary knows.
Does she?
Why would you think I would know?
Because you've won the past 2 weeks.
Good. Well, the answer is...
it's all by default.
Grey Stark Hall was the answer. Right, there's 3 points in the bonus pot.
Grey School?
What?
Did you say Grey School?
Grey Stark Hall, I think it was. Grey Stark Hall, yeah. Right, there's 3 points in the bonus pot. Alexa, roll a dice.
I rolled a six-sided die in God.
Yeah.
Three.
Right. So that's a yellow.
Mestor.
Episodes Mestor. And stories.
Mestor.
Yes.
Wait, first of all, Alexa, stop. You need to explain to Ian what to do at this point.
Ian.
What?
If you know the answer, just say, I know. And then you can answer it, okay?
Okay.
But I suggest doing it in the voice of Mestor, so I definitely know it's you.
No, Edgeworth.
No, Mestor says
Edgeworth. No, it's Mestor's voice saying Edgeworth.
They're going to say Edgeworth.
Right, here's the question then. It is a yellow one, which is episodes and stories. In Tooth and Claw, what Scottish alias does the Tenth Doctor take on when he first meets Queen Victoria?
I know.
Go on then.
James McCrimmon.
You should have played your Joker.
Didn't,
You could have played your Joker there, but you didn't, so that's fine. But he doesn't get the point.
He would have won the game.
No, he couldn't. Now, come on, guys, pay attention. He doesn't earn those points for himself.
He doesn't earn it.
But he don't earn them for himself, so it would be pointless playing as Joker, wouldn't it, Kirby? Right, Alexa,
think about it.
Flip a coin. Today.
What?
She's misbehaving today.
She didn't hear you.
Alexa, flip a coin.
Heads.
Thank you. Right, so heads, that means that it's an add points to another player. Ooh. Right then, Ian, who would you like to give 3 points to?
Who would I love to give 3 points to?
Yes.
Not yourself.
Not yourself, obviously.
Yeah.
Kirby.
What?
What?
You've been kind of picking on him throughout the episode.
Controversial decision there.
That's my job. I get to be picked on.
That's why. I'm giving you a reward.
God knows why. But anyway, that's fine.
Yeah.
The current scores are...
I don't know you well enough yet, so...
Come on, I've got 10 minutes left before I get told off. Right then, the current scores are, in last place with no points each, it's Ian and Mary. In second place with 2 points, it's Robert. In the lead with 3 points, it's Kirby. And we have 3 jokers still intact. Mary's question. Alexa, roll a dice.
5.
Well done for doing it quickly for once. 5 is green, which is monsters. So, Mary, when scientists created the vervoid plant creatures, what were they intended to be? We already had this question once before, actually.
He must have dropped the cards.
I don't know.
You don't know, so therefore we get one of these. Does anybody know just for the fun of it?
No, I don't remember.
They were supposed to be slaves.
They were indeed supposed to be slaves. Well done, Ian. Right then, so Alexa, roll a dice.
2. 2
is pink. Companions for Ian.
Mm.
Which of the Doctor's female companions starred in the one-off 1981 special Canine and Company?
Play your Joker.
Oi, shut up, Kirby.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm getting the feeling I should play my Joker.
Yeah, I'll go on then.
It was Sarah Jane Smith, Elizabeth Sladen.
Lucky you said that and not Joe Grant.
Right, things are moving on now.
I'm glad I didn't say Joker and he thought I said Joker.
Hey, right.
Mestor?
Yes, quickly.
Why are we not going to do Canine and Company as we're going through everything?
Because it's not Doctor Who, it's a spin-off. We're doing Doctor Who. I did establish this quite a long time ago.
I know.
Nobody ever listens to me.
Just hoping.
You wait until now to ask?
And then if you want to go down the road of Canine and Company, I'll pass on all those episodes.
Yeah, thank you, Mary.
I'm not talking about Sarah Jane Adventures. I'm talking about specifically Canine and Company. And I've asked before. I was just jackie right.
We have actually done Canine and Company at some point in the past, I believe. Yes, but we're not going to do it again. So. Right then, Robert.
Yes, sir?
Alexa, roll a dice.
4. 4
is purple. Years and
mine
dates.
Mine says 6.
I'm not interested in what yours says. Right then. So, Robert, what city were the 1948 Olympics where the Doctor admired a torchbearer held in?
Oh, my goodness. London? I don't know.
London, I don't know, is the correct answer. Well, I got
it right.
I don't know. Yes, well done.
What story was that in?
I think we had that question recently.
Yeah, that's the story where that everybody hates, so I can't remember the name of, the set in the 2012.
Fear Her.
Here, Fear Her, that's it. Well then, Kirby. You ready?
Fear.
Kirby.
Master.
Right. Alexa, roll a dice.
6.
Orange. All right, move to the next card then. Orange is cast, crew, and beyond, and this is your question. What was the full name of the companion that Blue Peter presenter Peter Burvis played in the mid-1960s? You're falling asleep? Oh, you're still there.
I've gone blank.
Have you?
Sorry. Yes.
I remember his first name.
Stephen Taylor was the answer, so I'm going to say Stephen Taylor. Yeah, I'm quite surprised you didn't get that one, Kirby. There's 2 points.
I'm not surprised. Why would I have gotten that one?
Because we've already watched several stories.
But you know how long ago?
It was only a few years ago. Right, 2 points in the bonus spot for this question. Stand by. Actually, I haven't done the question. Alexa, roll a dice.
Six.
Oh, it's orange again. Right then. Which member of the Only Fools and Horses cast starred as John Lumich in the 10th Doctor adventure, The Age of Steel?
Easy.
Now, it's a four... But there are multiple choice on this one, but anybody knows the answer without the multiple choice.
I know.
You know, do you, Kirby? Robert, sorry.
Kirby?
Whose question is this?
It's a bonus pot. You just don't listen, do you, Kirby? Bonus pot. Go on then, Robert.
I know already, though. It's Roger Lloyd Pack.
It is Roger Lloyd Pack. Yes, so there's 2 points to distribute or take away, according to what Alexa says. Alexa, flip a coin.
You got heads.
Oh, so you give them. Who you give the give 2 points to then, Robert?
I'll give to Mary.
Oh, that happened last week, didn't it?
I will
it?
Remind you that that's how I won the last.
I know. But I took points off you and I felt guilty for it. I still feel guilty for it. So.
And so you should.
Guilty forever.
All right. Okay, right. Yeah. Mary.
Yeah.
Alexa, roll a dice.
Four.
Four is purple, which is years and dates. Rula Lenska guest starred in Resurrection of the Daleks, but which year did she enter the Celebrity Big Brother house? It is multiple choice, Mary.
And
the choices are 2006, 2008, 2009, or 2000?
2008.
Well, sadly.
Close.
No, it was 2000, and according to this, 2006.
Oh, okay.
That point goes into the bonus pot. Right, Ian. Alexa, roll a dice.
I rolled a six-sided die and got two.
Yeah, can you do it a bit quicker next time? Two is pink, which is companions. So, Ian, in which period of history is the Time Warrior in which Sontarans make their debut set? It's multiple choice. Do you need the multiple choice, Ian?
Yes, I do.
Medieval, Tudor, Dickensian, or prehistoric?
Medieval?
Yeah,
sounds about right.
Correct.
Yay!
You see the confidence I gave?
Right, Robert.
Yes, sir.
Alexa, roll a dice.
Three.
Ooh, you got a yellow one, Robert. Episodes and stories.
Ooh.
Right, complete the 2006 story title, The Something Pit.
Satan Pit. Did I play my joke already?
Yes.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah. Yes, you did, yes. Kirby.
My store?
Right, Alexa, roll a dice.
Three.
It's becoming quite slick, this new method, you know.
I suggested it how many weeks ago?
After she tried to burn the house down. All right, smarty pants. I'll deduct a point for your sarcastic jibes in a minute. This is your question, episodes and stories. What was the name of the final full Seventh Doctor story adventure? Anybody there?
Final whose?
I mean whose?
Doctor.
So repeat the seventh question.
Doctor. All right. What was the name of the final full Seventh Doctor adventure? What was it called?
A Joker survival.
I think he said Joker, so I'm going to accept that he did say Joker on that one. Is that his correct?
Yes, I did.
Yes, Joker and
yes. Well done, Kirby. Right. There's 1 point in the bonus pot. Alexa, roll a dice.
Three.
There's another yellow one.
Pastor.
Okay. Pardon?
I turned off my fire tablet because it's getting annoying.
Oh, dear. Now you know how it feels, Kirby. Right, then, this is the question for the bonus pot point. What was the name of the first episode featuring the Ninth Doctor?
I know.
Rose.
Oh, he called it out. Oh, Ian's very naughty, Ian. We'll do another one.
Right. Oh, nuts.
Now it'll be one I don't know.
I know.
We'll do another one. It's all right. Same category. 1 point in the bonus spot. In Time Lash, the Doctor and Perry uncover a mural on... What the hell does that say?
I know.
Go on, then.
Third Doctor.
I'll give you that one. Right, that's a point,
and
then.
Joe.
Pardon?
And Joe.
Well, yeah, no, it's fine. I think it's quite a lot. No, it does say Joe on it as well, but never mind. That's my third Doctor's fine. That was part of the answer. Alexa?
I thought it was just going to be a mural.
One each?
No. Alexa, yeah. Flip a coin.
You got tails.
Right, so that's... You can take a point off someone, Ian.
Ooh. Who was that voice just trying to get half a point?
That'll be Robert.
Oh, Robert then.
All right, so the scores are in last place with 2 points, Mary, in joint second place with 3 points each is Ian and Robert, and then the lead with 5 points is Kirby. Mary has a question coming for her. Alexa, roll a dice.
6.
Right, you've got an orange one, Mary. What was the first actor to portray the Doctor's nemesis, the Master?
That's easy.
Joker, Roger Delgado.
Yay!
Marvellous. Indeed it was.
You do know the answers, Mary.
Right, Ian?
If they're obvious ones.
Yeah. Right then, Ian, here we go. Alexa, flip a coin. No, it's not. It's not flip a coin, is it? No, it's roll a dice. Alexa... Roll a dice. Today. Alexa, roll a dice.
I rolled a 6-sided die and got 5.
Yeah, thank you. Right, you've got a green one, Ian, which is monsters.
Oh, I hope it doesn't fall up.
Who were the alien menace that in the 7th Doctor story, Silver Nemesis?
It was the Cybermen.
Yay!
It sounded like a trick question, you know.
No. Yeah. Oh, no, it was the Nazis. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was
the Cybermen. I never think I know any of the answers, so when I get what sounds like an obvious one, what's the trick?
Right then, yeah. Robert. Alexa, roll a dice.
5
is green, which is, like I said, monsters. And it's, what were the vampire-like creatures in the 7th Doctor story, The Curse of Fenric, called? Do you know the answer before the multiple choice becomes available to you, Robert?
Yes. Hemivores.
Hemivores is correct. Yeah. Well done. It's very close at the moment as we move to Kirby.
Nestor.
Alexa, roll a dice.
I rolled a 6-sided die and got 3.
Why do you sometimes do it quickly and then sometimes be very irritating? Right, you've got 3, which is yellow, which is, of course, episodes and stories. Oh, good Lord.
I played my Joker already, right?
Nobody's got any Jokers left. It's very unusual.
For survival.
Because normally Mary ends the show with a Joker intact, but nobody's...
Yeah.
Right then, Kirby.
Very wisely, too, on the Delgado.
Indeed. And you would have never lived that one day on Mary if you got that one wrong. Yeah. So, Kirby, complete the story title, Delta and the...
Oh, my gosh.
Complete waste of my life.
Good answer.
Hold on, are we going the spine of the
novel?
No,
just waiting for Kirby to come up with the answer so we can put all ourselves out of our misery.
I said Bannerman, how many times have
I... Well, I didn't hear it. When you listen back to the show, you'll see that I didn't hear it. Yes, Kirby, it is indeed.
I said it 3 times.
Well, I'll deduct 3 points then for your cheekiness.
No.
Hey, did Kirby say it yet?
Yes, that's the correct answer, and Kirby wins. We've had lots of stuff come through on the feed.
Yeah, remember, when we get around to Delta and the Bannerman, I believe only Adam and myself are the only two people who actually like that story.
Hey, I do too. Thank you very much.
All right. Don't get into an argument. Otherwise, I'll have to start playing the a certain bit of music. This one. Anyway, well, I'm not going to play all of it. Right then, so on the feed we have Lee Anthony Davis. JNT wasn't the best showrunner, and there are many reasons for this. One of them is he liked to enforce his personality on the characters and what they should wear. Laurie Nick said, I was only quoting Sixy and his comment about bubbles. And then Lee says, right, I have to go now. I've enjoyed listening to you all. Until next time, bye for now. Oh dear, he's contaminated. Ian Kirk says, East Cheam sounds like a Tony Hancock 1950s radio show reference. Robert Vence Jr. says, hi everyone, it's too bad it was the last story of the season series, a low note to go out on. And then he says, isn't technically wonderful. And then he says, hi Ian, that'd be you, I think. Ian, he's referring to.
Yeah.
And then Ian, that'd
I'm
be you.
I'm in there too.
Yeah, Ian, that'd be you, says, hey. And then Robert Wentz says, just came by for a quick visit, lol. I watched the story on my old VHS tapes. It date back to when it was on PBS. Nostalgic.
I think he said that is what I read.
Yeah, no, but he's just posted it again on the live feed. I'm probably in trouble because we've run past 9 o'clock, so it seems to happen to me every single week. But I'm just going to have a look at the Doctor Who news page just to see, because I don't want to be in this embarrassing situation of finishing the show and then being told, why didn't you talk about something, rather? That's
and
on
also
the news.
Mention the sponsors.
Oh, yes, Lavazzi and whoone.co.uk. There we go, I've done that bit. the Doctor's talking, apparently, on something or other. There's Jodie Whittaker, David Tennant, Matt Smith, and some bird talking on YouTube. That might be worth looking at. But I can't tell you what it says because it's on YouTube. It's a video. And then Jodie Whittaker was with David Tennant on something like this. So there's a few, still lockdown Doctor Who stuff happening. And I did watch the lockdown best of days.
One each week, isn't there, or something?
Mm. So yeah, that's good. Sadly, the series itself probably is going to be behind by a year or so. So we won't have any proper.
Well, we're going to have
after
the
Christmas special. Any proper Doctor Who for a while, but at least we know that at some point it will return. Okay, so Ian, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope you haven't been too traumatized.
No, I really, really enjoyed it, surprisingly. Right. I was
surprisingly.
It was great.
Well, I was given such a great lead-up. I said, oh, yeah, I've just started listening to the last episode, and I got a, oh, in return.
Well, naturally. Yes.
I was got your traumatized, cold open. Though.
He was worried about the cold open you had last episode, so.
Yes, that doesn't happen very often, but sometimes the stuff that we talk about before we go on air is quite amusing. So occasionally I do tag it on, but not very often. Robert Vence Jr. says, good luck on the podcast awards, Adam. I'll listen to it later. Oh, you mean the show? Oh, yes, talking about podcast awards. Yes, if you'd like to vote for us, I think the link is, I've forgotten it, so I'll have to go and click on it because I've forgotten what it is. Nice thing to segue and finish the show on. Yes, britishpodcastawards.com/vote. Where you can vote for us. You have to, there's a search line, just type in 20 and megabyte 20 MB, we'll come up, click on us and then vote for us, and that'll be very nice. I'm not expecting any major things to happen, but the more votes we get, the more recognition we get, and it's very nice anyway, so please do that. I don't think you can do it more than once. You should get a recognition sort of email just to confirm you've done your vote. But yes, thanks for those who have voted for us already and those that may indeed vote for us in the future. The deadline apparently is the 6th of July, so you've got a bit of time, but please do so. Okay. So yes, thank you very much, Ian, for coming on. You're welcome to come back at any time. I know that is unlikely to happen.
You're all relatively lovely.
Well, even Mary.
Oh, sorry, relativity.
So until next time, which of course is going to be Attack of the Cybermen, which should be next week if I don't get murdered by my wife. Thank you for listening, taking part and watching the show, and for your votes. Please continue to do so. Goodbye.
Goodbye, bye. Fancy pants.
So why don't you stop worrying, buzz off and enjoy your evening out.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.